It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, a unique gathering this week. Native American leaders from across the state will partner with UW researchers to confront environmental challenges.
First, we look at a mostly hidden history of Milwaukee. The mafia operated out of most big American cities at one time or another, and Milwaukee is no exception, though that history doesn't get as much attention as its big city neighbor, Chicago.
Our next guest is out to remedy that. Gavin Schmidt is the author of the book, The Milwaukee Mafia, Mobsters in the Heartland. He's speaking at Boswell Books in Milwaukee on Saturday, March 14th at 2 p.m. Gavin, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, how big a presence did the mafia have in Milwaukee over the years, maybe in comparison to other cities like Chicago?
Well, compared to Chicago or New York, it wasn't as big, but obviously that's more or less a population thing. The size of Milwaukee has never gotten anywhere near the size of Chicago or New York.
So how widespread would you say it was in Milwaukee?
In the early days, it was more focused in the Third Ward, which is sort of around the Summerfest grounds. As the years went on, it spread and throughout the state and had effects on surrounding areas, even Las Vegas.
I want to talk about the Third Ward because, you know, these days Milwaukee's Third Ward is kind of a cool, hip place. It's got, you know, shops and restaurants. And it sounds as though in the past what you're talking about, it was more of a hub for the mob. How did the Third Ward end up being the home of the mafia in Milwaukee?
Well, I'll try to keep this short. There was a fire in the Third Ward in the 1890s, so nobody wanted to live there. Coincidentally, it's the same time the Italians started immigrating to Milwaukee. Being the new immigrants, that's where they set up their housing, which was terrible housing. But if there's one thing the mafia loves to do, it's prey on innocent people who, you know, need all the support they can. So it was a prime picking ground for them.
And who was the first mafia boss out of the Third Ward?
His name is Vito Guardalabene.
And tell us something about him.
Vito came from an area in northern Sicily. He came to Milwaukee in the early 1900s. He was thought of as the king of the Third Ward. If you wanted to do anything in the Third Ward, if you wanted to get a job, if you wanted to get a bank loan, if you wanted to do anything, you pretty much had to go through him because he had the connections that would make it happen.
Are there any particular stories that you associate with Vito Guardalabene?
I don't know about specific stories. A lot of it was facilitated through his two sons. So connecting him directly to anything is difficult.
Well, the name Vincent Crupi is one that you think we should know when it comes to the history of the mob in Milwaukee. Who was he?
Vincent Crupi ran the Red Light District in Milwaukee, which was on Water Street in the 1920s. Pretty much all of Water Street was brothels at the time. And Crupi is an interesting character, not only for running the brothels, but for how much lenience he got when he was finally put in the House of Correction. When in the House of Correction, the police kind of looked the other way, and he would go on day trips to visit his wife. And then as long as he checked himself back in by the end of the day, nobody cared.
Well, so why did he get that special treatment?
Well, he wasn't the only one. There were a handful of bootleggers who also had that. There were just people who were locked up, and for whatever reason, the guards didn't care. They were probably getting a little bit of money or alcohol on the side, and things were a little more lenient in those days.
Now, counterfeiting in Milwaukee sounds like it was a mafia-influenced activity pretty early on. What's some of the history there?
Counterfeiting is a very interesting thing. Today, as everybody knows, it costs more than a penny to make a penny. But in the early days, it was very interesting. You could melt down a piece of silver and make, you know, a silver dollar or something even larger if you wanted to. So you could basically melt down a quarter, turn it into a dollar, as long as you had the right kind of mold to do it with. So it was like you could literally make money just by doing that. It's an amazing thing.
Garbage collection early on in Milwaukee was influenced by the mob, it sounds like. What's the connection there?
The connection is that, again, the Italians immigrating in the early 1900s, it coincides with the time of garbage collection starting up. Prior to that, people would drive out of the city, load their garbage up onto their horse carts, and burn it out in the countryside. But garbage collection started up, and the garbage dump was actually, again, where the Summerfest grounds are now, which is kind of funny. But, again, because the immigrants got those jobs, it all had to go through the mob, because the mob ran the city garbage dump, and they hired the haulers, they hired the dump managers, anyone who wanted that type of a job, which was pretty much everybody arriving off the boat at that point, had to go through Vito Guardalobene and his two sons.
And one area we haven't talked about yet is, a time period, the Prohibition era, which would pretty much be associated with the zenith of mob activity. Was that true in Milwaukee, too? Was there a bootlegging operation, for instance? What was it like then?
Absolutely. Prohibition, like whether or not it was the highlight of the mafia is debatable, but it's definitely when they made their most money, at least initially. They had these amazing connections set up through Canada, Chicago, Detroit, Buffalo, and obviously people had home stills and could make beer and whiskey at home, but Canada had an interesting law during Prohibition where they had a prohibition of their own, but they didn't have a law against exporting it. So Seagram's, for example, would still export their alcohol. You just had to find somebody who was brave enough to bring it across Lake Erie or wherever and get it into the States. So the mafia came in at just the right time with these perfect networks because they knew people throughout the country who weren't afraid to run things in their cars.
So that was part of it, too. Well, how did you go about researching all of this when it's a history that prides itself on being secret?
I'm very lucky. We have something in this country called the Freedom of Information Act, and it allows me access to FBI records, police records, any number of things that, are set up by city or federal governments who are tracking these people. And it's amazing how many of these files are out there that never led to arrests or convictions. A lot of them are just daily reports of following these guys around. So there's so much out there that was being kept on these guys day to day that's never seen print before, because unless they got arrested or convicted, it never made the newspaper. So it's just an incredible wealth of knowledge.
Do any of the mafia lines that you write about still have traction in the city of Milwaukee today?
Well, that's a debatable subject. I can tell you that there are people who were active in the 1980s who are still alive today. I don't know how active they are today, and I'm kind of remiss from discussing any ongoing activity there may or may not be.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll leave it there. Gavin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Veronica.
We were speaking with Gavin Schmidt, a Wisconsin-based writer, the author of The Milwaukee Mafia. He's speaking at Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee this Saturday at 2 o'clock and at both Barnes & Noble stores in Madison next Saturday, March 21st.